Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, text number 46. Na sat pramatam asad indriya vaji sutta. Ni votapam vishayada sushud nikshipanti. Tedasava sahayasu tamamu tamonde. Samsara kuparu mrityubhaye shipanti. Naset. If we do not follow the instructions of Achyuta, Krishna, and do not take shelter of Balaram. Letter. Meanings are packed into five letters. Pramatam. Careless, inattentive. Asat. Which are always prone to material consciousness. Indriya, the senses. Vaji, acting as the horses. Sutaha, the chariot driver, intelligence. Nidva, bringing. Utpatam, to the railroad of material desire. Vishaya, the sense objects. Das Yushu, and the hands of the plunderers. Nikshipanti, throw. Te, those. Das Yava, plunderers. Sa, with. Haya Sudam, the horses and the chariot driver. Amum, all of them. Tamaha, dark. Ande, blind. Samsara Kupe, into the well of material existence. Uru, great. Mrityubhaye, fear of death. Shipanti, throw. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, if one does not take shelter of Achyuta and Baladev, then the senses acting as the horses and the intelligence acting as the driver, both being prone to material contamination, inattentively bring the body, which acts as a chariot to the path of sense gratification. When one is thus attracted again by the rogues of Vishaya, eating, sleeping, and mating, the horses and chariot driver are thrown into the blinding dark well of material existence, and one is again put into a dangerous and extremely fearful situation of repeated birth and death. Purport. Without the protection of Gaura Nithai, Krishna and Balaram, one cannot get out of the dark well of ignorance in material existence. This is indicated here by the word na-no-set, which means that one will always remain in the dark well of material existence. The living entity must get strength from Nitai Gaura or Krishna Balaram. Without the mercy of Nitai Gaura, there is no way to come out of this dark well of ignorance, as stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godaye Godoidaye Pushpanvanto Chito Sando Tamo Nudao. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and Lord Nityananda. Who, like the sun and moon, they have risen simultaneously on the horizon of Gaura to dissipate the darkness of ignorance, and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. This material world is a dark well of ignorance. The fallen soul in this dark well must take shelter of the lotus feet of Gaura Nitai, for thus he can easily emerge from material existence. Without their strength, simply attempting to get out of the clutches of matter by speculative knowledge will be insufficient. So the text again. Otherwise, if one does not take shelter of Achyuta and Baladev, then the senses setting, acting as the horses, and the intelligence acting as the driver, both being prone to material contamination, inattentively bring the body, which acts as a chariot, in the path of sense gratification. When one is thus attracted by the rogues of Vishaya, eating, sleeping, and mating, the horses and chariot driver are thrown into the blinding well, dark well of material existence. One is again put into a dangerously and extremely fearful situation of repeated birth and death. The introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that we work not with our senses, the body, the material senses, but we work with our mind and intelligence. And here it compares the analogy that the intelligence is the driver and the senses and the mind is like the horses, or the senses like the horses, which the mind is the principal sense. And the body is put into danger when the sense, when the horse, we could say the driver, and the horses are misdirected. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita in many different places. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam uchate etera vimohat yatyesha gyanam ad prithidehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. As I explained before, because it's an important part of Srila Prabhupada's purport, that everything begins with hearing. Hearing has the potency to attract us to something, to some object. If we hear about Krishna from the right source and we have the right attitude, we can actually experience consciousness of Krishna. If we hear about other objects, their glories, then generally speaking, what we're hearing about is the glories of how our senses can come in contact with the object that's being glorified, and we can experience it. Whether it means to see something, or to taste something, or to hear something, or to touch something, the wonderful glories of hearing and tasting and touching and smelling, whatever, are glorified. And then people want to see if the glorification is actually what's being glorified, will actually bring about the wonderful experience that's being advertised. And therefore, one will go somewhere, one will buy something, one will order something, one will do something in order to get that experience. And behind that, whatever it may be, whatever we're attracted to, the underlying cause is kam, or lust. That when we hear about the glories of a particular object, then the senses become agitated by lust in order, in the material world, in order to experience that particular object. Especially in modern society, well, in every society throughout, since time immemorial, Principally, the glorification is about four things. Sometimes they're expressed in subtle ways and sometimes in gross ways. But generally speaking, the four things, of course, we know of: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. With a heavy emphasis in modern society upon mating and defending. Now, Prahlad Maharaj doesn't seem to agree with modern society that this is actually the path of happiness. Happiness in the material world means we have a problem, and when we solve the problem, we feel peaceful. So actually what we're doing is we're looking for peace. And we're looking for peace by using our mind to solve problems. But just in the very attempt to solve the problems, our mind is unpeaceful. It becomes agitated. Now, our mind may be conducted by intelligence, but if the intelligence is wrong, then our mind, no matter how much it works to put the body into a safe position, will inevitably lead it to sense gratification. That's called misdirected intelligence. Now, what's the difference? The body can also be utilized for Krishna's service. As I've given the example many times, that if a man is walking down the street and he sees a beautiful woman, then the mind immediately says, and the senses, go get her. She's the one. She's your soulmate. Now the intelligence may kick in and say, wait a second. She has a dot on her forehead, and she has a man next to her. So there's some possibility she might even be married. But then the mind says, oh, don't listen to this ridiculous intelligence. No one believes this anymore. The actual philosophy, the real knowledge, is that if it feels good, then you do it. That's the purpose of life. Purpose-driven life. But the intelligence may say, wait a second, mind. I read some book, I think it was last year, Bhagavad something. And it said she has a dot on her forehead, there was some commentary or something, that she might be married. And it wouldn't be a good idea. Oh, come on. That book was written 5,000 years ago. Get up to date. That was written by some old guy in the Himalayas who was smoking some plant next to him. Who believes it? You've been to school. You're not a fool. You know the rules. So then if the intelligence is not strong enough, then the soul says, well, all right, it seems like the mind won. The intelligence hasn't come up with a very good presentation. I think you should just go for it. Think of a plan, intelligence, how to meet her. The plan says, all right, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. I warned you, but if you want me to become a servant of my mind, of your mind, then I'll do it. I'll serve your mind, or I'll serve the instructions you get from higher authority. It's up to you how to use me. Now you're telling me to serve the mind's desires and the senses, so I'll think of a plan. All right, write her a letter and tell her that she's the most beautiful person you've seen. And put in very small letters so she can't read it, in the last 2 weeks. Tell her in the letter that you're madly in love with her. You can't live without her. And that if she can meet you in such and such place, at such and such time, you'll give her the sun, and you'll give her the moon, and if she's nice to you, you'll give her a few extra stars also. But don't sign the letter, because the man next to her is twice as big as you are. So in that way, the intelligence will direct the mind and the senses to do something in order to seek out sense gratification. On the other hand, if the intelligence is sufficiently strong by contact with Krishna and a sufficient experience of a higher taste and is not simply sold out to sense gratification at any in all circumstances, then the soul will tell the intelligence, well, what should we do? So the intelligence said, well, you read the Bhagavad Gita and you know that you're here, you should give this couple a Bhagavad Gita. You should go up to them, tell them that they're the most beautiful couple you've seen today, in the last 15 seconds. And that they're certainly worthy of reading this book, Bhagavad Gita, and if they give a good donation, you throw in a Krishna book. So then the intelligence is used in Krishna service rather than for sense gratification. So it's up to us. But the soul only utilizes the intelligence of Krishna service if he has enough, at least theoretical knowledge, that this will bring about a spiritual experience which is superior to something material. Or one has sufficient experience in the past that by distributing transcendental literature or engaging in Krishna service, one comes deeper in contact with Krishna and experiences a higher taste and sense gratification. So devotional service is generally divided into six different qualities, of which the first two qualities in Sanana Bhakti are Kleshagni and Sulabdha. No, what's that? Shubhada. The first one means that one will become free from the sinful reactions. So sinful reactions are caused by sinful activities. And there is a vicious cycle that goes on. And in that cycle, there's avidya, not knowing who we actually are and thinking ourselves of this body, then we become a servant to the body and the senses and the mind, which includes the mind. So if we don't know who we are, since we're servants by nature, eternally we're servants, therefore we have to serve something, so we wind up serving the gross and subtle material bodies or other people's gross and subtle material bodies. So we have to be servant of something. If we're not servants of Krishna, then we become servants of the material energy. That's called avidya, false ego, asmita. If we don't know who we are, we become easily attracted to thinking ourselves to be something that we're not, like dressing up in a costume party, thinking that we put on the dress of a good fairy, and we start believing I am the good fairy, going around with our magic wand and blessing people in the party, and believing we're actually doing something substantial. Or if we dress up as Dracula, we start thinking, I wonder what it would be like to bite this person's throat. We become deluded by our change of dress and believing ourselves to actually be that personality. So this is called, from that ignorance of knowing who we really are, then we take on another identity which we're actually suited for. Then, that in that other identity, there's naturally attachment and aversion. Every body that we get, if we get the body of a hog, and we see stool, we'll think, oh my God, finally, some good food. So when the hog eats stool, for him, it tastes sweet, because that's what his senses are made for. And if we eat halva, then it tastes sweet to us. But this hog is also tasting the stool is sweet. He's not thinking, oh my God, I'm hungry, I gotta eat something. This is the only thing available, I'd go for it. No, he's saying, wow, look at that. Comes in five colors too. This is really something extra. And we get the body of a vulture, then when we see a dead body, we're thinking, wow, this is a festival. And we ourselves may think, how is this possible? How can any living entity think that a dead body is delicious? But that's the body. As soon as we get a body, there's a certain attachment, and there's a certain aversion that goes with it. And then, every body, every living entity, as we become more and more absorbed in material energy, we become more and more fearful. We become more and more attached to the body, then we're afraid it might die. If you see a little bird trying to eat a worm, it's always looking back and forth. Back and forth, making sure that no living entity is going to come and eat it. It's eating a worm, which didn't look back and forth, got in the wrong situation. And now, the bird is in a fearful situation. So we're always in a fearful situation, but why is that fear? Because we're misidentifying ourselves with these gross and subtle material bodies. But if we identify ourselves as Krishna's servant, eternal servants of Krishna, then there's nothing to fear. Because whatever happens to this body has no effect on ourselves, although what happens to the body may have an effect on how we can serve Krishna. In any case, in any circumstance, even at the hour of death, if one has sufficient consciousness, sufficient knowledge, then one will be able to serve Krishna in any circumstance, even at the time of death. So that's why Krishna and Balaram are coming, Gornitai, when they actually look like Gornitai, when they're in their normal state. Then Gornitai are giving us the transcendental power to chant the holy name and come in contact with Krishna. And when the intelligence is utilized to come in contact with Krishna, when Krishna sees that we're making an effort to utilize the intelligence he's giving us through Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and surrendering to the super soul within our heart, then he himself reveals himself through the holy name, because we want to actually come in contact with him. And in that happiness and the ecstasy and that enlightenment, in the purification that comes from contact with Krishna, then everything becomes clear, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. One's taste changes from matter to spirit. One is interested in spiritual happiness, spiritual sense enjoyment, rather than material sense enjoyment. As I gave the example yesterday, if there's a big feast, then naturally we want to eat. But if it's required that we put a glove on our tongue, then naturally the taste will diminish greatly. The food will be the same, our eating may be the same, but the taste will differ. But if we take the glove off and we taste the actual food as it is, prasadam, then we won't be inclined to put a glove back on our tongue. So when our senses become purified, and we can actually taste transcendental happiness through our senses, especially in terms of being conscious of Krishna, then we'll be reluctant to do activities that will put us back into material consciousness again. Because we'll have a higher taste. We'll be reluctant to use our intelligence to take our body into the ditch of material enjoyment, and rather we'll be interested in taking our chariot back to the spiritual world to enjoy eternally. So that depends upon our understanding things, applying that within our lives, and then experiencing Krishna consciousness, or if not, experiencing what the results are of not taking shelter of Gornitai in Kali Yuga and becoming subjected to the horrors of that is described in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Avadhuta Roy.
One question from Avadhuta Roy, yes. Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. It seems to understand one is not the body is easier than to realize I am not the mind. What do you think?
Well, if we use our intelligence, then we'll realize both of them simultaneously. We're not just trying to differentiate between ourselves and the body. If we see that the body is changing by the use of intelligence, then we'll understand that the mind is also changing.
Okay. One more question from Avadhuta Roy. I heard Govardhan can protect and remove all obstacles of all devotees anywhere. Why then we don't worship Govardhan instead of Narasimha Dev?
What it has to be instead? Nrisimhadev can remove everything. Gornitai can remove everything. Shalagram Shila can remove everything. Pure devotee can remove everything. Why?
He said Govardhanan is more related to Vrindavan than Narasimha.
Is that right? You mean Nrisimhadev is kind of on the outs? Nrisimhadev is Krishna. But right now, Govardhan, if we want to get protection, Prabhupada gave us Lord Nrisimhadev to protect us. He didn't say, you're falling off a cliff, if you're about to fall off a cliff, you don't usually think of Govardhan. Oh, Vrindavan. Better to chant the name of Nrisimhadev so you don't fall off. So Krishna comes, he does different activities, and he has different forms for his activities suitable. If you were in a jungle and some animal attacked you, you'd probably like a lion on your side, not a rock. Because Govardhan could do, he's all powerful also, but generally speaking, Krishna performs his pastimes in a form which is just suitable for the occasion. So to take shelter from the demons, the asuras, he comes as Nrisimhadev. To give us Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan when we're liberated, he comes as Govardhan. He doesn't come as Nrisimhadev to teach us how to dance with the gopis, or gopis don't dance on Nrisimhadev. They dance on Govardhan. Similarly, when the demons come, then they take shelter of Krishna in his Vishnu forms, because it's Krishna himself playing on the flute, doesn't kill the demons. It's Krishna in his different forms. So there's different forms that are just suitable for a particular pastime. So the pastime of protecting the devotees, especially since we're in Kali Yuga, is the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadev. And when we're liberated, then we can think of Govardhan all the time within our heart. And if you're really advanced and you don't care about whether the car runs over you or not, then you can just meditate upon Vrindavan all the time. You don't have to look both ways. But even then, devotees don't act like that because they know this body belongs to Krishna and we're in the pastime of the Sankirtan movement. We're not in the pastime of the Rasa Leela. So for the pastime of the Sankirtan movement, we have to protect the body to utilize in Krishna's service. Anything else? Yes. We have a microphone here. What's the other part of your name now? Mahalakshmi, what's the last one?
Mahalakshmi
Dham. Mahalakshmi Dham, okay. Is there a Dham called Mahalakshmi?
I don't know.
because wherever she lives, it's her dham.
Hare Krishna, you were mentioned clothes and uniforms and costumes, like a fairy, like a girl who is wearing costume of the fairy, and then she's thinking that she's that fairy. And I wonder how these clothes are influenced on our mind. For example, like an ordinary man who is at home, and then he's dressed in this some uniform which represents a power, like a policeman or a soldier. He's going like more crazy or angry. And for women, we are, for example, simple girls and housekeepers, wives, mothers. And then when we are wearing short skirts or long skirts, that influence on our mind. So I'm asking you if you could explain something more about this cloth influence on our mind.
Well, any association we have will influence us. Even, but to speak of wearing clothes, we just look at a picture and we can start imagining that we're a Superman or a Superwoman. You don't even have to put on the uniform. You just have to float on the manasa and the manaratena on the chariot of the mind. We can fly anywhere on the chariot of the mind. But sometimes when, you know, we put on some clothes and other people actually believe it, and then we start getting involved too. Just like one man was walking in the forest and he had some enemies who wanted to bewilder him. So they said, "Mr. Patel, you become a goat." One man jumps out at Mr. Patel, who's walking in the forest, and he has many enemies who want to get even with him. So the man jumps out and says, "Mr. Patel, you've become a ghost." So Mr. Patel said, "What are you talking about? I'm not a ghost." And then he walks a little further, and another man jumps, "Mr. Patel, what happened to you? You've become a ghost." And this happens a few times, and Mr. Patel is going, "Oh my God, I've become a ghost." So by association, we can believe practically anything. That's the idea. You hear, and what to speak, if you dress up like something, you start imagining. Just like little children, I remember when I grew up, when Superman became popular. Well, I guess it was popular even before I was born, but it was becoming more and more popular when they had television. You could watch television, Superman leaping buildings on television. And little children were wearing Superman outfits. Literally, they were just like, I guess nowadays they had Spider-Man outfits and they had all kinds of outfits. And little children were jumping off buildings, thinking that because they wore the Superman outfit, they could actually fly. So that's the power of imagination. I have the uniform. He does it. I could probably do. Ah, ah. Mommy. So we have to be aware. But when his mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work, as it says. A man has to elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So the mind can bewilder us, and it's already bewildering us. We think we're this body. We can think we're some other body too. Why not? At night we go to sleep. We're dreaming so many things. So this is just another dream also. So why not during this dream we could just change our dream and think we're in some other dream? Many people are crazy, they think like that. Sometimes people have many identities. Good Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And we have that tendency too. When we're in the temple, we have a little halo on our head and everyone thinks we're such a nice devotee. And we walk out and two little horns sprout up. The tail is out. That can happen instantaneously. Anything else? Yes.
you mentioned that living beings or animals, birds, are always afraid for their life. Someday I...
Except unless you're Garuda.
I had some continuous pain, and then I got afraid for my life. I thought I might have cancer, and I got afraid. I saw that I'm not so spiritual advanced yet. I want to ask, why aren't we always afraid for our life, human beings? Because we have more intelligence, we see more reasons, we have more reasons to always be afraid for
then
our
life. You must be always afraid then. If you see all the reasons to be afraid, then you must be afraid.
Why aren't we?
You are. We just are half unconscious, that's all. We don't realize how much anxiety we're in. Until we get a little free from the anxiety, then we realize, my God, I was in so much anxiety, I didn't even realize how much anxiety I was in. I remember one time, as I said, Prabhupada, I went to see with the devotees from Buffalo. We had gone to New York to do Harinam, which was on a picture of Back to Godhead. Then we went to Buffalo, to Boston, to see Prabhupada, because he was coming to the new Boston Temple in 1969. Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's disappearance day. I remember this temple had two floors, and the temple room was on the second floor, and the first floor had the new ISKCON press in it. So Prabhupada walked up the steps, and we were doing bhajan, we meaning the devotees, were doing bhajans, and Prabhupada walked up, and the whole atmosphere became like we were in Vaikuntha. By Prabhupada's association. And then I realized how much anxiety I was in, because I could see the difference between being in Vaikuntha and atmosphere of being in Vaikuntha and just being in normal consciousness. So if you want to find out how fearful we are, just get some books, go out in the street and start trying to distribute them. You'll start realizing how much anxiety we're actually in. How much speculation we are. This person looks like he'll eat me. That person looks like he's a demon. That person looks like he's, you know, puffed up. That person looks like he's spaced out. You know. And then try to approach them, and then you'll see that most of the people are much more fearful than you are. They admire someone who has the boldness to actually approach them. So we're walking around an illusion of many varieties, and one of them illusion is that I'm pretty calm, I'm pretty peaceful. But we're always in anxiety in this material world. We're just unconscious of it. Anything else? Kala. Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.